The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. Quandary Phase.
Trying to predict the future is a mug's game, but it's a game that life forms everywhere learn to play, because the future is always changing and we're going to have to live there, probably as soon as next week. However, Arthur Dent could never have predicted that just a few days ago, an update to his copy of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy would suddenly declare that the Earth had now, for no reason that he could possibly fathom, flicked back into existence, as if it had never been destroyed by a Vogon constructor fleet at all. But any life form worth their sodium chloride would do what Arthur has consequently done under such circumstances. They would hitch the quickest ride home available by spacecraft, haulage lorry, and Saab automobile. Though perhaps only Arthur Dent could have fallen in love at first sight with the Saab driver's catatonic sister, all but unconscious on its back seat.
Bye, Russell. Thanks for the ride.
Bye, Fenny. Good grief. Am I really home? On Earth? No bulldozers, no Vogons. Everything as it was before. Before... The phone's ringing. The phone is ringing! Key. Need a key. Damn it. No, under the stone frog. Yes. Oh, door stiff.
Mail. Piles of it. Dead. Kitten? How? Oh, never mind.
Right. The phone. Where did I leave the phone? Upstairs. I'm coming. Here.
Oh, stalking fartwax.
I'm home. By my own personal timescale, so far as I can estimate it, it must be years since I left. But how long here? This is my house. The front door key where I left it, and my bed the way I left it the morning the bulldozers came. But how? The planet was demolished, utterly destroyed, and it wasn't a hallucination. Don't question it, Arthur. Enjoy it. Own it. Oh, getting dark. I wonder if the electricity has been cut off. Well. And everything's where I left it. Half-read book, half-thrown-away magazine, half-used towels, half-pair of socks in half-drunk cup of coffee, another half-pair missing in action, a half-eaten sandwich half-turning into... Ugh. Bung a fork of lightning through this lot and you'll start the evolution of life all over again. Oh. Hang on a minute. This is new. A present? It's heavy. A glass bowl. Engraved. So long and thanks for all the fish. Odd. Looks like crystal. Sounds like crystal. A bit posh for cornflakes, I suppose. A fishbowl. For which I will require fish. And being home, I don't need you in my ear anymore. In you go, little babel fish. Have a holiday from all that translating. Where's my hitchhiker's guide? Oh, no. Just a guide-sized hole in the bag. Oh, well. Easy come, easy go.
Yes, sir, but it's a very bad line. Can I ask... ask you first if you are a BT account holder.
Well, let's say I am, for the sake of argument.
And you're calling from where?
What does it matter where I'm calling from? Letchworth!
Well, I'm sorry, but you can't be coming in on that line. Not from Letchworth.
Stuff Letchworth, if that's your attitude.
Hold on, caller. Let me check the Letchworth exchange.
No!
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, in a moment of reasoned lucidity, which is almost unique amongst its 5,975,509 pages, says of the products of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation that it is very easy to be blinded to the essential uselessness of them by the sense of achievement you get from getting them to work at all. In other words, and this is the rock-solid principle on which the corporation's galaxy-wide success is founded, their fundamental design flaws are completely hidden by their superficial design flaws. This not only suggests that the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation is responsible for the majority of personal computer operating systems sold across the galaxy, it is a widely respected view, widely held by right-thinking people who are largely recognizable as being right-thinking people by the mere fact that they hold this view. And Ford Prefect is one of them. Having learnt that nothing in life is certain, not even the destruction of a planet you've spent 15 years of your life researching, Ford is now attempting to put the universe, in as much as he understands it, to rights.
Come on!
Hello, caller.
Yes?
There's no way you are calling from Letchworth, sir.
I know that. I am an intergalactic hitchhiker calling from a sales scout ship of the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation, currently on the sub-light-speed leg of a journey between the stars known on your world, though not necessarily to you, dear lady, as Pleiades Epsilon and Pleiades Zeta.
Do you mean Harmsworth?
I know what I mean, and the reason why I am bothering you with it, rather than just dialing direct as I could, because we have some pretty sophisticated telecommunications equipment here in the Pleiades, I can tell you, is that the penny-pinching son-of-a-starbeast piloting this son-of-a-starbeast spaceship has disabled it and insists that I call collect.
You want to reverse the charges?
No! These people are the creeps of the cosmos, polluting the celestial infinite with cell phones, palm tops and computer operating systems that never work properly, or when they do, perform functions that no sane person would require of them, and go beep to tell you when they've done it. And this guy is on a drive to sell more of them. And if his benighted consumers don't have mobile communications, PDAs and repetitive strain injuries, he will accelerate their technologies until they bloody well do have!
Can we just go back to the start?
No! No! Listen, I've shoved him into the suspended animation facility. He's fast asleep, and I've put his ship in a parking orbit round a moon of Sessafras Magna. You won't have heard of it, so don't ask. Now, all I need is for you to just do what I've asked you to do. Just like you do for any loyal customer.
And that's what you want, is it?
Yes.
Thank you, caller.
Look, I'm on a mission to save civilization as we know it, or something like that. And I know you're going to help me. Hello? Oh, I don't believe...
At the third stroke, it'll be 1:32.
Yes!
And 10.
She did it! You little beauty!
At the third stroke, it'll be 1:32 and 20 seconds.
Thank you for choosing the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation Life Pod.
The pleasure's all yours. Life Pod, set coordinates to Port Sessafron orbiting station.
Thank you. Share and enjoy.
Arthur Dent has awoken on Earth, the planet he thought he'd lost forever. No longer is he the wild-looking creature who arrived home last night. His hair is washed, his chin clean-shaven, his laundry done. His dressing gown is no longer decorated with the junk food condiment stains of 100 grimy spaceports. This morning he found the 3 least hairy things in the fridge, put them on a plate, and watched them intently for 2 minutes. Since they made no attempt to move within that time, he called them breakfast and ate them. Between them, they killed a virulent space disease he'd picked up without knowing it in the Phlegethon gas swamps a few days earlier, which otherwise would have killed off half the population of the Western Hemisphere, blinded the other half, and driven everyone else psychotic and sterile. So this particular incarnation of Earth was lucky there. Now he has some calls to make. What he most wants to do is locate and establish contact with Fenny, the disturbed young woman whose brother gave him a lift home last night and who's been exercising Arthur's imagination ever since.
Ah, BBC, this is Arthur Dent, the Light End producer.
But first he must deal with the massive contradictions his return journey has precipitated.
Look, just put me through to my head of department, would you?
This proves to be less tricky than he thought.
Yes, hello, make it quick, the pubs are open.
Geoffrey, Arthur here.
Oh.
Look, sorry I haven't been in for a while, but I've gone mad.
Yeah, oh, hang on, the usual for me, Richard. Arthur, yes, look, not to worry, thought it was probably something like that. Happens here all the time. What you need is something to ease you back in. Tell you what, there's a quiz show about wallpaper going begging. How soon can we expect you?
Whew, when do hedgehogs stop hibernating?
Hang on. Maureen, when do hedgehogs stop hibernating? No, that's bats. Really? Good grief. Sometime in spring, we think, probably.
Right. Well, add a few minutes for me to have a shave, and I'll be in after that.
Great, and don't worry, we'll have your office cleared out and cleaned up for your return.
Gosh, thanks.
You'll never know it had writers sleeping in it, really.
Having exhausted the hospital sections of Yellow Pages, local directories and even the police station, searching for a girl he barely glimpsed, all to no avail, Arthur Dent's good mood has ebbed away. In order to break the impasse, he decides to restock with food something less than 20 weeks past its best-by date.
Fenny. Fenny, it's got to be a diminutive, but what of? Fenella? Fiona? Fennimore?
At this point in our story, Arthur's subconscious mind has accepted that the atmosphere of the Earth has closed, finally and forever, above his head.
Fenner? Fennick? Phenomenal.
He's put behind him the tangled web of irresolutions into which his galactic travels once dragged him. He can now forget that the big, hard, oily, dirty, rainbow-hung Earth on which he lives is a microscopic dot on a microscopic dot, lost in the unimaginable infinity of the universe.
Funicula? Fenstermacher? A phenobarbital?
And in drawing all these conclusions, he's completely and utterly and irrefutably wrong. The reason for this is standing at the next road junction under a small umbrella.
Fenny! Fenny! Fenny!
How did you know my name?
I...
You're not a friend of my brother's, are you?
No.
Well?
Well, are you going somewhere? I can give you a lift.
Yes, I'm going to Taunton. Goodbye.
Well, that's wonderful.
Is it?
Well, yes. I only live a few miles away.
I don't live there. I'm going to the station. I live in London.
Oh, I can take you to London. Yes, let me take you to London.
Are you going to London?
I wasn't, but...
It's very kind of you, but I like the train. Thanks. Bye.
Fenny.
Yeah. How do you know my name?
Just supposing there was some extraordinary way in which you were very important to me, and that though you didn't know it, I was very important to you. But it all went for nothing because we only had 5 miles, and I was a stupid idiot at not knowing how to say something very important to someone I've only just met and not crash into lorries at the same time. What would you say I should do?
I'd say you should buy me a drink before my train goes.
There you go, mate. Tomato juice, half a bitter, 2 rounds of BLT. Next, please. Yes? Oh, so what's wrong
with you? There is, for some reason, something especially grim about pubs near stations. A very particular kind of grubbiness. Like the feeling which persists in England that making a sandwich interesting, attractive, or in any way pleasant to eat is something sinful that only foreigners do.
Well, don't eat it then.
Well, even I could do better.
Why don't you tell me what it is you have to tell me?
Yes, right.
Fenny.
Excuse me. I wonder if you'd like to buy some tickets for our raffle. It's just a little one.
What?
To raise money for Angie, who is retiring.
What?
And needs a kidney machine. Only 50 pence each. So you could probably even buy two without breaking the bank.
Yes. All right. There. Two, please.
Oh, I do hope you win. The prizes are so nice.
Yes, thank you. So, Fenny...
And what about you, young lady? It's for Angie's kidney machine. She is retiring, you see.
Here, look. Here's a £5 note.
Oh, we are in the money. Down from London, are we?
No, that's all right, really. Keep the tickets.
Oh, but you must have your tickets, or you won't be able to claim your prize. They're very nice prizes, you know, very suitable. Here.
Thanks. Anyway...
And now, dear, what about you?
Oh, for heaven's sake! These tickets are for her.
Oh, I see. How nice. Well, I do hope you...
Thank you.
No, thank you. Oh, excuse me.
Where were we?
You were calling me Fenny, and I was going to ask you not to.
Oh.
It's why I asked if you were a friend of my brother's. Well, half-brother, really. He's the only one who calls me Fenny, and I'm not fond of him for it.
So what is...
Fenchurch.
What?
Fenchurch. And I'm watching to see if you're going to ask me the same stupid question that everybody asks me until I scream. I shall be cross and disappointed if you do. And I shall scream. So watch it.
Fine.
All right, you can ask me. Might as well get it over with. Better than have you call me Fenny all the time.
I'm guessing...
We've only got two tickets left. You see, and since you were so generous when I spoke to you before...
What?
I thought I'd give the opportunity to you, because the prizes are so nice. Very, very tasteful, and I know you'll like them. It is for Angie's retirement present, you see. We want to give her...
A kidney machine, yes. Here.
Oh, there you are.
Yes, we are.
Oh. Oh, dear. I'm not interrupting anything, am I?
No, it's fine. Everything that could possibly be fine is fine.
Oh, I say, you two are not in love, are you?
It's very hard to tell. We haven't had a chance to talk yet.
I'd better let you see the prizes, then.
Hello, you are about to ask me a question.
Yes.
I know what it is. We can do it together. Ready? Was I found...
In a handbag?
In the left luggage office at Fenchurch Street Station? And the answer is no.
Oh, fine.
I was conceived there.
In the left luggage office?
Don't be daft. What would my parents be doing in the left luggage office?
Well, I don't know.
It was in the ticket queue.
The
ticket queue. I saw the claim. They said you wouldn't believe how bored it's possible to get in the ticket queue at Fenchurch Street Station.
Right.
Look, I'm going to have to go in a minute or two, and you haven't begun to tell me whatever this incredible thing is you're so keen to get off your chest.
Please, let me drive you to London. It's Saturday. I've got nothing particular to do.
No, thank you. It's kind of you, but no. I need to be by myself for a couple of days.
But
tell you what, I've got something to write on. I'll give you my number. Here, one of these will do. Here, we can relax now.
Oh,
hello again. A box of cherry liqueurs, and also, and I know you'll like this, a CD of Scottish bagpipe music, and I...
Yes, thank you. Very nice.
Well, I just thought I'd let you have a look at them.
Yes, I can see that they are indeed a box of cherry liqueurs and a CD of bagpipe music. That is what they are.
Yes, I'll let you have your drink in peace now, but I knew you'd like to see...
Whoops. Have to go.
Oh.
Don't worry. We'll talk again. Perhaps it wouldn't have gone so well if it wasn't for her.
Yes. I think that is probably perfectly true.
Don't see me off. Call me tomorrow.
Of course.
Yoo-hoo.
Fenchurch.
Yoo-hoo.
Yes.
Have you got ticket number 37?
Way in, hello. Yes. You'll have to speak up. What? Can you ask your friend to stop playing the bagpipes? I can't. Oh, that's better.
No, I only do the bar in the evenings. It's a fool who does lunch and Jim, the landlord. No, I wasn't on. What? You'll have to speak up. No, I don't know anything about no raffle. What? Hold on, I'll ask. Jim, bloke on the phone reckons he's won a raffle. Keeps on saying it's ticket 37 and he's won.
Oh, it was a guy in the pub here who's won it.
He says, have we got the ticket?
Well, how can he think he's won if he hasn't even got a ticket?
Oh. Jim says, how can you think you've won if you have... What? Jim, he's effing and blinding saying there is a number on the ticket.
Of course there's a number on the ticket. It was a bloody raffle ticket, wasn't it?
He says he means it's a telephone number on the ticket.
Oh, look, put the phone down and serve the bloody customers, will ya?
Lost in misery, contemplating the beautiful and mysterious grey glass bowl left by persons unknown on his bedside table, bearing the words, "So long, and thanks for all the fish," Arthur Dent's subconscious mind reaches out to make sense of this new earth and the frustrations of living on it. Closing his eyes, he can feel like a tingle on distant nerve ends, the flood of a far river, the roll of invisible hills, the knot of heavy rain clouds parked over a transport cafe somewhere away to the south. He feels the presence of countless other minds, some wakeful, some sleeping, one fractured. One fractured. He knows instinctively that it is Fenny. He knows that he wants to find her, and again feels the fracture, lying before him across the days of the earth, bisecting time. Beyond this chasm is another land, another time, an older world. And as Arthur looks at the conjunction of two Earths, one no longer existing, he awakes from the doze to find himself about 18 inches above the rose bushes of one of his neighbours. Idly, he wonders what he's doing above them and what is holding him there. And when he discovers that nothing is holding him there...
Oh, that's one trick I'd forgotten I'd developed. I could fly in my sleep, though. For goodness... Trouble is, now I want to fly, I can't distract myself enough to do it. Oh, how many thorns? Ow! Oh! I'm coming! I'm coming! I'm here! Oh, you utter!
It's the drizzle that makes me really morose.
Please shut up about the drizzle.
I would shut up if it would shut up drizzling.
Look, it's very nice seeing you again, Rob, and this is a very snug little transport cafe. But I'm actually looking for a girl. I last met her there, over the road by the motorway junction, and if she comes back, I don't want to miss her.
Do you know what it'll do when it stops drizzling, do you?
No.
Blatter.
What?
It'll blatter.
I curse myself for bothering to say this, but actually, I don't think the rain will blatter. I think it will ease off.
It never eases off.
Of course it does.
It rains all the time.
Didn't rain yesterday.
Did in Darlington.
Really?
You're going to ask me where I was yesterday?
No.
But I expect you can guess. Because it begins with a D.
Does it?
And it was stair rods there, I can tell you.
I expect you added stair rods to your list.
Oh, there's more than a list. I have a diary. It goes back 15 years. Shows every single place I've ever been. And what the weather was like. And it was horrible. All over England, Scotland, Wales I've been. All around the continent, back and forth to Denmark, and it's all marked in and charted. Even when I went to visit my brother in Seattle.
Well, perhaps you'd better show it to someone.
Oh, well.
Goodbye, Mr. McKenna. Oh, and thank you for achieving the impossible.
I'm sorry?
I thought living alone in a cave in prehistoric Islington was the most tedious experience I would ever undergo. You, however, have proved me wrong. I wonder...
While Arthur Dent is feeling bereft and sorry for himself, Ford Prefect is several thousand light-years away, simply feeling sorry for himself.
Oh, zarking racket. Can't I hitch one peaceful ride? Ow, ow, now I've got cramp.
The ship Ford has inveigled himself aboard, one can hardly term his presence hitchhiking, as the ship's only other sentient occupant is not aware of his presence, is a vast silver dreadnought, built for the questing robots of Zaxis. Having embraced an economy based entirely on binge drinking, video gaming, and reality television, the reptilian lizard rulers of the planet Zaxis had brainwashed their attention deficit human subjects so effectively that public apathy, rather than panic, was the response to attacks on Zaxis by its neighboring world, Zerzla. The robots and their ships were built to defend the planet, but were inclined to think there had to be more worthy civilizations to defend. Using self-propelled tools to reconfigure their ships, they made huge pan-galactic leaps in search of true civilization. These voyages almost always resulted in disillusionment and a sad, head-shaking return to orbit over Zaxis, not helped by encounters with hedonistic ne'er-do-wells like Ford Prefect, who would sneak aboard their ships via the exhaust vents, hijack the monitoring systems to play video games, and clutter up the corridors with a sort of lifestyle magazines which celebrate controlled substances and ecologically unsound forms of transportation.
Ugh. I just want a few days R&R, for Zark's sake. What the? A screwdriver? Wait, mind where you're flying! Nearly had my eye out. Shoo! Shoo! No, don't tidy up my magazines. Buzz off and screw up something. Oh, first rule of hitchhiking, never make up a bunk in a maintenance shaft. Second rule, never bunk next to a monitoring area. What in Zark are the sensors picking up now? More makeover vids? It's not as if there'll be any glimmer of intelligence from the Zaxis news network.
Single transferable vote has been put aside in favour of a competitive makeover of both legislatures. The Zaxisian chamber in Magnolia and the Zerzlan with a cheerful nautical theme.
Thought not.
On a cold moon, in a cold galaxy, the future is war. War and nothing but war.
Video games. Not quite as trouser-filling as the real thing, of course, or as ironic.
Sidereal Daily Mentioner News Network on the Cosmovid Loop, coming to you live. Our reporter, Trillian Estra, has been following events at the state rededication of the Aga Buthon Scepter of Justice. We'll be going over to her in just a moment. But first, this message from our sponsor.
Oh, way to go, Trillian. Prime time at last. Ah, here we are. All should be peace and quiet. Except it isn't. External monitor on.
Zaxisian ship, surrender or be destroyed by our star cruisers. You're in violation of the Zerzla restricted zone.
A battle? That's the bloody racket. How am I going to sleep through all this? I suppose I could look up some insomnia cures.
Rest. A good hot bath is always.
Oh, fuck.
Recuperation. C. Tea, making a proper cup of, and baths, good hot.
Third rule of hitchhiking, never import bookmarks from Arthur Dent's guide. Now, hang on a moment. If I do manage to get to sleep in amongst all this, I could wake up dead. Not good. Time for a little quiet persuasion.
Earth, mostly harmless, but with some uniquely civilized...
Pause. Prepared download...
Please attach universal connector.
You could at least help me find one.
Hi! Is this Friends of the Planet?
That's what it says over the window.
Yes, right. I'm here in Islington doing a bit of research into its prehistory, and I was passing your shop, and it occurred to me that I'd like to give you some money to help save the dolphins.
Very funny.
To free them from captivity. From Dolphinaria, weapons research, jumping through hoops, return them to the wild. Quite a lot of your appeals letters were on my doormat when I returned home recently after a long trip, and as I was lighting the fire with them, I thought, why not give a few quid to help save the dolphins? So I was passing and saw your shop and... Are you all right?
Actually, you're rather annoying me.
Just like this?
Astonishing, I know, but true.
Do we know each other?
Do I look like the sort of person who'd spend time with you?
Sorry. Must be having a déjà vu. This is Friends of the Planet, isn't it?
Yes, and that leaflet was sent out a year ago. But unless you've been in outer space for the last 12 months...
Well, funny, you should...
would know that there is no need for further contributions.
Well, I'm glad the appeal was such a success.
Are you doing this to wind me up, or are you as stupid as you look?
Look, I was passing. I saw the shop. I thought I'd give you some money to...
I tell you what. Why don't you find another endangered species? Rhinos, gorillas, your own particular branch of Homo sapiens. Put your money somewhere useful.
Well, if you're going to be like that about it...
Leave now, before I set about you with this plaster rhinoceros!
Very well. You wouldn't happen to know this part of North London well, would you? I'm looking for a cave.
Ah! 8 hours west of Arthur Dent, as the crow flies by passenger jet, sits a man alone on a beach, mourning an inexplicable loss. He can only think of his loss in little packets of grief at a time, because the whole thing is too great to be borne. He watches the long, slow Pacific waves come in along the sand, and waits for the nothing that he knows is about to happen. And as the time comes for it not to happen, it duly doesn't happen. The beach is a small sandy stretch somewhere along the coastline that runs west from Los Angeles, then north up towards the misty bay of San Francisco, where it's very easy to believe that everyone you meet is also a space traveller. Starting a new religion for you is just their way of saying, aye. There, barely inland from the ocean, lies the house of this inconsolable man, a man who many regard as insane. His name is simply John Watson, though he assumes a more bizarre style of address. He's lost everything he cares for, and is now simply waiting for the end of the world, little realizing that it's already been and gone. One of the many reasons people think him insane is not through his choice of name, but because his house is called the Outside of the Asylum. In the house are a number of strange things, including a grey glass bowl engraved with 8 words.
Hello. I'm wondering if you could help me. I'm researching the prehistoric limestone caves of this part of London, and it appears that these Mews cottages were constructed on the site of one that I, lived in.
Oh, Arthur! I thought you were going to phone me first.
Fenchurch?
Close your mouth, Arthur, unless you're going to throw up, in which case we'll go and get a bucket. Come on.
You live here?
Yeah. Why are there bits of plaster in your hair?
I was struck by a rhinoceros.
All right. Oh, I mustn't forget. My brother found this in his car.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yours?
Yes.
I think we need to talk.
What strange glitch has led Arthur to Fenchurch's front door? How much does she know of his past? And can Ford Prefect get some sleep aboard the robot ship before he exhausts his supply of Playbeing magazines? The centerpiece unfolds in the next full frontal installment of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
In that episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams, William Franklin was the book. Simon Jones played Arthur Dent, Jeffrey McGiven, Ford Prefect, Bill Patterson, Rob McKenna, and Jane Horrocks was Fenchurch. June Whitfield was the raffle woman, David Dixon, the ecological man, Anne Bryson, the BT operator, Simon Greenall, Jim, Brian Cobby, the speaking clock, and Geoffrey Perkins was Arthur's BBC boss. The announcer was John Marsh, the surround mix was by Paul Dealey, and additional effects by Ken Humphrey and Paul Weir. The script editor was John Langdon, and the music was by Paul Wicks Wickens. The production manager was Joe Wheeler, and the production assistant was Susie Matthews. The programme was adapted, directed and co-produced by Dirk Maggs. The producers were Helen Chatwell and Bruce Hyman, and it was an above-the-title production for BBC Radio 4. If you would like to make a contribution to a leading animal conservation charity, please send as much as you can to Adopt a Vogon Prosthetic Captain for Christmas, Planet Voguesphere. And don't expect any tax relief on it, because there won't be any.